so often before we had this guideline that as an audience, you'd watch an intimate scene and feel really awkward. But actually what we were feeling was the actor's personal uncomfortableness around doing that scene. Whereas what we want is to be able to stay enjoying the character's journey through that scene, be it that there's full-on romance or be it that it's awkward, or, you know, but be able to stay enjoying that character's awkwardness, not feeling the actor's personal uncomfortableness.
Welcome to Doing It with me, Hannah Witten, where we talk all things sex, relationships, dating, and our bodies. Hi everyone, welcome back to Doing It. I hope that you are all doing well. My guest in this episode is someone who, when I learned about their profession, I was so curious. I dived into learning lots more about it. It was like a penny dropped of like, of course we need this. And what we need is intimacy coordinators on set. And that's on set of theatre, film, and TV. My guest in this episode is Ita O'Brien, who is the founder of Intimacy on Set and the creator of the Intimacy on Set Guidelines. She has worked on some of my favorite TV shows and just some of the most incredible stuff that is coming out at the moment that is doing amazing things in depicting sex and intimacy on screen. She's worked on Sex Education, maybe my favorite TV show, Normal People, I May Destroy You, and Gentleman Jack. In this episode, we talk about the industry, why she came up with the intimacy guidelines, why she felt that they were needed. We talk about how she helps actors distinguish between their personal and their professional bodies and why that is so important when you are a professional actor on set and there are intimacy scenes involved. We talk about some specific behind the scenes stuff that went on that you might not have known just as a viewer watching the show. We talk about the risks of doing intimacy content, checking in with actors, and communication on set from everybody who is involved in the production. We talk about how if there is an intimacy scene, she will take the writer's vision and the director's vision, but then also go to the actors and talk about their boundaries, what they are comfortable with, what they are not comfortable with, and then making sure that there is communication there and everyone is on the same page and knows what to expect when it comes to that scene. It was an absolute pleasure to chat with Ita about the work that she does, what it means to be an intimacy coordinator, and how you can become one too, if you're interested. Thank you so much for listening. And also, if you haven't watched Sex Education, Normal People, Gentleman Jack, or I May Destroy You, what are you doing? They're all amazing TV shows and you should also go and watch them. I hope that you enjoy this episode. Ita, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really excited to get to chat with you all about the work that you do. How are you?
I'm great, Hannah, and thank you so much for your interest and for inviting me to have this sharing of the work with you.
I'm really looking forward to diving in. So I guess the first thing would be, in your words, what is an intimacy coordinator and what is their role when it in rehearsals, but then also on set? What do you do?
So an intimacy coordinator is a practitioner who will bring process and protocols to the intimate content from any production, be it theatre, TV or film, and then put in place a structure in order to be that there can be agreement and consent, and that's of touch, of simulated sexual content and of nudity, and then to be able to choreograph, give a clear structure for the intimate content, so that all the physicality serves the director's vision, serves what the scene is asking for, so that everything is known and it allows the actor to bring all their skills of acting, of embodying character, of telling really good physical storytelling to the intimate scene.
Yeah, and so you created these intimacy on set guidelines? Is that kind of what you're saying about like the protocol and the structure that is in place?
So yes, I've sort of brought together through my own practice and then working in conjunction with other practitioners who also had this awareness. So I was in conversation with a fellow practitioner who was head of movement at Mountview, Meredith Dufton. And she was aware from having to note plays that her student actors were asked to do, you know, when they were doing the intimate content, invariably the physicality wouldn't serve the storytelling. When she would talk to them about actually what the physicality needed to be, again, that thing of the eyes glazing over and that sense of, oh my goodness, how do I do this? Because there was no structure in order to do it safely.
So almost just kind of like distancing themselves from it so that it didn't, they weren't like really in that scene.
Yes, absolutely. That's one aspect of it. And then, you know, that thing of, you know, when there isn't a structure, when perhaps talking about it really clearly, that thing of deep breath and almost eyes shut and just going for it type feeling, which of course in that place, you know, you're not going to be able to do your good work, your best work, because of course then you're not really being present, open, grounded and conscious with actually what you're doing. My other colleague was Vanessa Ewan, who's one of the senior lecturers in movement at Central School of Speech and Drama. And she had had the inspiration from, you know, a good 15 years ago of watching a rehearsal for a fight and watching the fight director and seeing the time and the space that was given to rehearsing the fight scene. But of course, you know, you do a risk assessment. You know, if you're going to put two swords in people's hands, you're going to make sure that they're you're not going to cause a serious injury. You're going to teach techniques. You're going to say, okay, this is the fight that needs to look like it's happening. And now let's find all those reverse energies and all those techniques.
Yeah.
So it can be safe. So bringing in techniques, teaching those. And then once you've taught all that choreographing really clearly. So that was her awareness. And so I worked in conjunction with Vanessa Ewan as well, incorporating her work in conversation with Meredith. And Meredith invited me to teach the work at Mountview from April 2015. So it was our ongoing conversations, interrogating how the work was delivered, the impact that it had, working, being mentored by Vanessa. And then the last bit of the jigsaw of my triumvirate of amazing women that were sort of very much instigatory or part of the pulling together of best practice was Jennifer Ward-Leland. And she is a president of New Zealand Equity. She is a really experienced and amazing actor, and as well as an acting coach. And in New Zealand, of course, what had happened was that lots of the big productions were going to New Zealand because of the amazing landscape.
Yeah.
And then all their actors being asked to do, you know, full-on TV series or films with intimate content, and being asked to perform all the simulated sexual scenes. And she said, so they actually drew together a green room to discuss what was being asked of them and actually how can they put in place best practice. And then from that green room event, they drew together guidelines. So they were published in October 2015.
Oh, so they've been all around for a while.
So her guidelines just spoke to the actor.
Right, okay.
And of course, I knew nothing about her or what they had done. And as I was developing the work at the drama schools, and then in 2017, the students were saying to me, well, this is all very well to do this here, but what about when we're out in the professions? So that's where I started speaking to British Equity, and I said, what guidelines do you have for the actor? And they sent me their legal documents, both for theatre, TV and film, which, of course, are absolutely spot on and robust as a contract, to make sure that the relation, you know, the agreement between the agent and the actor and the production is set up. But of course, it doesn't actually speak to the actor. And certainly for myself, I'm a dyslexic person. All the legal terminology just makes my brain fizz. So in the summer of 2017, I Googled again, and that's where I found Jennifer's guidelines. So she published them in October 2015. So I find it really interesting how, you know, somehow there's these memes across the globe, you know, so then, and at the same time, I discovered Intimacy Directors International in America, and they too had been developing their own journey through to intimacy. But anyway, but I contacted Jennifer in the summer of 2017, and then in October I was saying to her, please can I use your structure, your guidelines that just speak to the actor, and use that as a fundamental template on which to expand to create the intimacy onset guidelines. So all those people were you know, were really instigatory in helping to bring together the best practice, and then to bring together the structure, you know, that integrated all these people's, you know, awarenesses, and then, like you say, putting in place processes and protocols so that, you know, the journey through can be really robust.
Yeah, it's just like this pooling in of all of these people's expertise and their experiences to create this thing that, I guess, just what wasn't there and you saw was necessary. Can you give us some highlights? what's on the guidelines? What's like the top points on it?
So the top points. So there's three overriding arcs or tenets, which is open communication.
Mm. Is that like between the director and the actors, or just like between or on set in general, but amongst anyone who's going to be there?
So that's a big shift from the get-go, from everybody. So I'm saying to producers right from the get-go, you know, and of course this is where the intimate content just wasn't considered as a skill. It wasn't considered as a risk assessment, as you would do a dance or a fight. So I'm inviting that shift to go, this is a body dance.
Yeah.
So you're asking two people to be moving together with a rhythm, you know, in order to be able to tell a physical journey. And the risk is, you know, that simulated sexual content and nudity and where you're touched all has an inherent risk.
Yeah.
You know, and all of that has to be considered. And just as you would do with a fight, you wouldn't expect someone to get up if they're supposed to throw a punch and just you know, you might talk about it really clearly and say, just go for it. You know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Is that what the case kind of like was before people started becoming more aware about having these guidelines and in place? Was it just like, okay, and so now your characters are going to make out and this sex act is going to happen? Off you go. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that mad? So
yeah.
without a sense of it being, you know, one, taking the risk, and two, you know, needing to make sure that everybody knew it was happening, one of two things would happen. The director would talk about it, and either they'd say to both actors, you go away and work it out for yourselves and come back and show me what you've created, in this sort of half embarrassed, half, you know, like, well, this is a private thing and you two need to work it out, and if you go and do that and you sort each other out. Or the director would say, right, you know what you're doing, put you in front of the camera now, just go for it. And in both of those situations, wow. Yeah, in both of those situations, one, so one of the tenets of the guidelines is always have a third person present.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that keeps, you know, the atmosphere in which you're working professional.
Yeah. Okay. Because in my head, I was just thinking with the one where it's like, oh, sending them off and letting them figure it out themselves, it implies that it's not a professional thing that they're doing, because it's like, oh, you are having a private moment, but they're not. They're two professional actors that are pretending to have a private moment.
That's right. That's right.
But they're actually just at work.
Yes, it's a day of work. And also, so in that thing where they're sent off privately, first of all, there's vulnerability there.
Yeah.
Because you're two people by yourselves. If somebody does something, say you have a kiss, you haven't agreed that you're going to include tongues, somebody suddenly puts your tongue in their mouth, their tongue in your mouth. Can you imagine that shock?
Mm.
Or when you're by yourself, what's the redress? You know, are you going to call assault? You know, so that the one thing,
yeah,
to individuals by yourselves isn't in the realms of being professional.
Yeah. And then I guess with like having these guidelines in place, it allows you to have a much more clearer idea of where, like, you as if you're the performer, like where you as an individual ends and the character begins, and you've got a really clear idea of that, so you know what to expect.
That's absolutely right. That what we want is that you're serving the storytelling, you're serving the director's vision, you're serving the writing, you're serving the beats of the scene, and all of that needs to be have your outside eye that's that's you know, you're offering or you're choreographing, and you're making sure that that is what you're working to, and your awareness is absolutely spot on, rather than you two as two people in your personal bodies trying to take care of each other, trying to offer, is this okay for you? Is that okay for you? And that confusion, and that's what's been there before the idea of actually bringing a profession and bringing a skill to choreographing, and that process through to that point of choreography of the intimate content, is that then who people were privately got really confused with what were they were offering, or the emotion that was happening within the simulated sex scenes. And that, you know, you hear of stories where, you know, someone's done a scene that's been a really fully charged intimate scene, and then the actress has had the actor arrive at their trailer and you know, expose themselves, because they were thinking that what was happening in that scene was what that person really felt for the, you know, their fellow performer, you know, and all these confusions. And I'm not saying that with the intimacy guidelines that there now won't ever be any show romances, you know. But my hope is.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it will be clear that was on set.
That's right. And again, before the intimacy guidelines, directors used to go, oh, we're going to be doing, you know, this, the intimate scenes tomorrow. Why don't you two go out and have dinner together tonight? You know, and get to know each other better. And so again, that.
Does that help? Like,
so often it says the best case scenario is that you get on well with your fellow actor.
Yeah,
of course we want to get on well with our fellow actor, but that doesn't just go for the intimate content. That just goes across the board. You know, of course we want to have a really good and respectful and open and fun and you know, free working relationship with in our professional lives. But as far as you see, and again, before the intimacy guidelines, that confusion of like, but if it's to look really raunchy, surely they have to be really raunchy with each other.
Yeah, because that's also undermining them as professional actors.
Absolutely. It was taking away from the fact that, you know, that this is a job of work, that they are actors bringing their skill of acting, and actually if they can bring their skill of acting to the intimate content, just like they would do, you know, a violent scene or a humorous scene, it's about their skill of acting. And you're absolutely right, this confusion and why it was that within the realm of intimacy that it wasn't considered that, or you know, that this the feeling was, if it's going to look really sexy, they've got to be really feeling it as themselves, and actually, and as you're, you know, actually going, no, you know, if they're honouring the character, if they're honouring the beats of the scene, that's what's going to make the best scenes. And then what's been so lovely in as you know, the work has been accepted, and as I've been working on, you know, I've had, you know, I feel so joyous and so privileged to have been working on, you know, such incredible productions.
Yeah, you've worked on some amazing shows.
This is it. Yes, absolutely. And being able to, and then bringing all of this structure to the intimate content, and that as it's gone out, Sex Education, Gentleman Jack, Normal People, I May Destroy You, seeing the quality of intimacy that can be created from working professionally.
Yeah. And also, I, as a viewer of those shows, when I first learned that there was an intimacy coordinator on set, I remember feeling really relieved. Just like, oh, good. Like, I'm glad that they were looked after, because, I mean, all of those shows have got some like really quite like intense intimacy scenes and intense sex scenes, some like humorous and some depicting like non-consensual sex acts as well. And so, yeah, I would just remember being like, okay, good.
I'm so glad you said that. And like, you know, just this weekend as well, I've had more people contact me saying exactly that, which is so lovely. You know, so two sides of it. One, my reflections are that, you know, so often before we had this guideline that as an audience, you'd watch an intimate scene and feel really awkward. And actually what we were feeling was the actor's personal uncomfortableness around doing that scene. Whereas what we want is to be able to stay enjoying the character's journey through that scene, be it that there's full-on romance or be it that it's awkward, or, you know, but be able to stay enjoying that character's awkwardness, not feeling the actor's personal uncomfortableness. And particularly with Sex Education, as you were saying, there's so many of those scenes, and it's so beautifully written, isn't it? So be written or first time.
Baba Ganoush, I think, might have been like one of my favourite moments.
Fantastic scene. Yes, and we want to, as the audience, to stay enjoying the uncomfortableness, because we know that we can inherently feel within our bodies that the actors are able to just fully embody and feel comfortable within themselves, so they can really give all of their skills to, you know, to the intimate content.
Yeah. I was wondering, is there a difference in how you work with actors in preparation for a consensual sex scene versus a non-consensual sex scene?
Well, if it's a full-on, you know, so for example, with the scene in I May Destroy You, can we talk to that?
Yeah, the gay scene, the male scene.
So for me, it's just that the added care, you know, so the risk that you're or I am looking at in each scene is what the scene is asking of the actor, and then also what that actor will bring to that scene. So for example, if it's just a kiss, say it's just a kiss, but if it's a kiss with, say, two lead actors that have been on a job for ages and they understand each other really well, they have a really clear working relationship, they've done loads of intimate content before, you wouldn't necessarily need an intimacy coordinator present for a kiss. So, for example, you know, the normal people, the structure was so inherent, it was so completely understood. I was absolutely there for all the major intimate scenes, similar scenes, but I wasn't there for all the kisses, but they absolutely had that structure in place.
Right, okay, yeah, because all of that work was like done beforehand as well.
That's right. So it's the idea of the risk. So obviously you're looking at what's happening, but also what's the emotional content of required in the scene, and that ups the risk. So in those kinds of scene, I'm even more checking in with the actors, checking in that they have, if they have any concerns about the scene. And then it's really important, even more, that when the actor's going to bring, you know, perhaps full-on charge, challenging emotional content, that the physical structure is even more clearly choreographed and anchored. And I'll perhaps ask them to then go through the physical shape perhaps a couple more times than I would do in, you know, so that physical energy and the physical structure is absolutely clear and absolutely anchored. Because, of course, when, you know, the actor releases into the full-on performance of it, then someone can really go somewhere else or go somewhere further. And that's where physicality is absolutely clear. You know, you know, if there's someone supposedly pinned down, just looking at the techniques that you use, so that it's the person who is so-called being done to that actually has the power over where the energy is, you know, bringing in all those stage combat techniques. And then, if necessary, as I have done in the past, you know, if it from intimate content into violent content, I work in conjunction with a stunt coordinator.
Ah, okay.
So that I'm bringing in the intimate content, the stunt coordinator is bringing the techniques of the you know, the violent content. So again, you know, there's all the techniques of stage combat that you use, that you make sure the physical structure is really clear, so that they can be so safe in that, so then they can really release into the character's emotional journey in the scene. And then the other thing that we do, which is really important, I always make sure that my actors, as it were, bookend, be aware. First of all, if you're going to do a simulated sex scene, it's a body scene. You know, you're telling the story physically. So I'm saying to the actors, make sure you do a good warm-up. And that warm-up, you know, serves several functions. One, it serves to help be that transformational self place from who you are and the person, getting into your bodies, doing good warm-up, then being able to really be present, open and grounded, so that you're ready then to really step in consciously, serving character, serving storytelling, physical transformation.
Do you then have a cool down?
End of each scene, regardless of whether it's a challenging intimate scene or a loving one, to make sure that they bookend, that they do a warm down whatever way. And again, actors have many different techniques. And so I'll talk to an actor, go, what works for you? I had an actor said, what are you doing to help you get work, step away from the work? He says, oh, I go home and I play with my, you know, baby, 1-year-old daughter. And I'm going, well, perhaps that's not the best, you know, to be using your daughter to be that transformation. Perhaps let's think of how you can professionally put your bookending, your stepping away from the work in place before you get to your daughter, so you can really just enjoy, you know, being father-daughter relationship. So, like, perhaps taking your character's clothes off and stepping into your own clothes, consciously stepping away. Perhaps it's, you know, shaking out, shaking through the body, doing a stretch. Perhaps it's imagining, you're standing under a waterfall and washing that character down. But what's important is that they put in a technique so they can really consciously know that they've done a really good day of work. They've really served that storytelling, and then they can step away so they come back to their personal selves. Yeah, so that they can, I loved it. One of my actors said that so they felt clean, you know, so that they haven't got a residue of that character. And then stepping back home as your personal self, ready to come back the next day, you know, again, be able to step in a really present and conscious way, knowing that you're using all of your skills as a professional yeah. rather than sort of muddying, you know, that personal and private self.
Yeah, and not having to, yeah, like you're saying, like take it home with you and it like then leaking into your personal life and affecting you offset.
One of the last bits that I will do with each scene is then I'll check in with the actors, but I won't check in with them. You know, obviously I'll check in with them on the day to make sure that they're okay, but I'll check in with them a day or two later because that's where, you know, it's that, you know, you've slept and that residue of sort of, you know, it's the day after, isn't it? That feeling of, oh, actually, I'm feeling a bit vulnerable here. That's where it journeys to the surface. So that's where I was checking a couple of days later and just check out that everything is okay. And if not, then putting in place whatever needs to be put in place to help support the actor. If there's any concerns, to answer those either and helping them or to seek advice, you know, from a professional, or if there's something the production can help support with, so that again you're making sure that they're not left feeling vulnerable about the work that they have given production.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about this video that I saw where I think you're talking about like doing a workshop with different actors and looking at the ways different animals have sex. And I was wondering if you could speak to that and like why you use that in like workshops and rehearsals with actors and how almost you find a way to figure out like how that character has sex and what the character's sexual behavior is.
That's right. So again, using our tools as an actor to that we can be transformative, we can really serve who this character is in this relationship and all the different energies that we can look at in the body, and so that also that we can have a shared language so that we can still be detailed and precise through the journey of choreographing the intimate content but not have to resort back to sexual language, or indeed we don't want to refer to who we are in our personal and private intimate lives, but again, really be professional. So animal work is on animal rhythms is one way of doing it. So there's many drama school trainings that use animal work as part of their trainings. If that resounds with the actor, then that's a really good way in. And looking at perhaps it's a lion, so you were looking at where does the lion hold their weight, what's their rhythms, and then looking at the intercourse. And it's animal work is so fantastic because it gives a whole package of breath and sounding and rhythm. So that's one way of doing it. But other techniques, somebody suggested the other day about cooking.
Yeah.
To cooking, whether it's something whipped up or whether you're kneading something.
Ooh.
Yes, I hadn't thought of that before, so that's a really great one.
I love that.
Another one is elements, earth, air, fire and water. Yeah, whether you start off feeling, you know, that there's something in water, it's the momentum of perhaps the waves of the sea, and then that, you know, is an emotion, and then your passion gets ignited to a little flame of a candle, and then that grows and grows into a, you know, a volcano as it erupts. So in all of those, you know, whatever's going to work for the actor, whatever language and references are going to work, but the intention is, so again, we can talk openly and freely, but professionally about all of our lovely detail, so that again the whole of the journey through the intimate content can be precise and clear, professional. The actors can really embody the different qualities, and then again they can release into something that is nuanced, beautiful, detailed, hitting the beats of the scene but free.
I love what you said about using all of those things as a reference for the detail of the scene, because I imagine that if you don't have that and you don't have that shared vocabulary and understanding, what actors potentially would have drawn on previously was referencing their own personal experiences, which isn't necessarily what you want to be bringing to a scene, because then again, it's like muddying those lines between the personal body and the professional body.
Absolutely. And of course, we all, you know, just as we all, you know, brush our teeth in different ways and make a cup of tea in different ways, we all, you know, have our sexual expression in different ways, and also how we express ourselves with our loved ones, or, you know, with partners through our lives, will be different with one person with the other. Because, you know, as we, we respond, we discover something different of ourselves in each of our relationships. And that's the same with all of our characters. Who is this character? And it's so lovely, actually, having the opportunity. You know, I'm saying to, or writers saying to me, oh my goodness, yes, you know, I'm looking at a scene where they say, just say they make love. And I'm saying, so what do you want from that? You know,
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Like, are some writers quite detailed in the script, or is it often just like, and then they have sex?
So, so for example, on Sex Education, Laurie's writing is so clear, very, there's absolute the beats right the way through. And then that's absolutely, I'm going, great. As the intimacy coordinator, I'm using, I'm just then charting that. I break it down. I put in the beats. I know that, I remember those, you know, some scenes, there's 16 beats that we're honouring all the way through. And then and I'm choreographing and making sure that detail is there. And the director comes along and goes, okay, we can lose that beat. That's the beat, you know. So there's that detail, and Laurie's writing and her vision, particularly comedy, or the one scene I'm thinking in particular was a, you know, comedy scene that can absolutely be honoured. And then, yes, you know, talking to writers and saying, you know, tell me exactly what you want. And oh, great, I now know that I can go away and really dream into the detail of what that scene is about, and then writing it and knowing then that that can be honoured, so that we can really, you know, serve the writer's vision, then serve the director's vision with all the idiosyncrasies of who each of those characters are, what it's showing us about both of those characters and the development of those relationships. And that detail can be brought, you know, when it's written really clearly.
Yeah. So I've got a few questions from our listeners. One person has said, is there a difference between coordinating straight and queer intimacy scenes?
There's no difference in coordinating it. What you do have to bring is making sure that both myself, if it's an aspect and a detail that I don't know, that's not part of my, you know, understanding in my life, to make sure I research it. I research, you know, make sure I read books, that I speak to people from that community, you know, and all gamuts of it, you know, so that I educate myself, so that what's being depicted absolutely serves that community. And then, of course, as I was saying, you know, the risk, you know, it might just be a kiss, but the vulnerability of that somebody doing that kiss can change. So the same thing. So then it's also in talking to those actors, is the scenes that are to be portrayed within that actor's personal knowledge. And again, if not, you know, then, you know, so inviting everybody to do the research. So that's what's important, is that whatever the scene is, you're making sure that you really honour it. But then once all of that work has been done, so that you're making sure that, that the detail, the quality, the positions, the rhythms, the journey, the emotional journey into that scene is right. And then once you do that, then again, the actual process of agreement and consent and choreographing it is the same. But you're making sure that you're bringing in all of that detail that you've all rehearsed, that you're all, again, honouring the writing, honouring what that storytelling is, honouring the director's vision of what that storytelling is, and putting all of that in place, so that it's authentic, and that, you know, my intention is always that for people from that community will go, yes, thank you, I feel seen.
That makes a lot of sense. And I guess it kind of comes back again to the, like, if you're an actor and the character you're portraying is from a different background to you, different sexual orientation to you, or different, like, accents to you, like, it's your job to do the research. And that's part of, like, learning about your character as well, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's exactly the same. All of that due diligence, all of that in-depth research, the intimate content, just the same as any other part of the script.
Yeah. Someone else has asked, how do you navigate wanting to achieve, like, truth and realism with the needs of film aesthetics? So I guess, is there ever any, like, disagreement with what the director wants versus what an intimacy coordinator might think is best for the scene?
So the work is absolutely about serving the writing, serving the director's vision. Yeah. So that's what I'm serving. And then within that, then checking in, you know, then it's the process is always a director speaking to the actors first. So again, it's the director's vision that's shared with the actors. Once that has happened, then I'll speak with the actors and checking out any concerns. So, for example, if I can speak to the last episode of the first series of Sex Education, the director, then there's this scene with Adam and Eric where they fight in the music room through to that intimate moment, so staring at each other. Yeah, and then they spit on each other's faces and then into the kiss.
Yeah.
So the director, the marvellous and incredible Kate Herron, who did such an incredible job on the second half, second block of Sex Education, she absolutely wanted to spit. The spit was a very important part of that, of the journey through that scene. When I checked in with both actors, they were concerned. And so I said, okay, well, let's, with that awareness, saying, well, let's just make sure that it's not your own spit or make up a substance. But they tried it once and they both came back and said, I'm not doing that again. So then, you know, we're creative people and we have cameras and cameras do magic. So the solution in the end was the actor was on the floor, camera above as if to the other person, piece of paper next to it, the spit lands on the piece of paper, and then the other way around, the makeup department then creating a lovely mixture that looks like spittle, dubbing it on the actor, camera there, the actor responding as if they received the spit, no one was the wiser. So it's those kind of things that we're looking at. So what's, and again, that's so important, you know, where I say to the actor, what's, you know, what are you happy with? But most importantly, where's your nose?
Yeah. And I guess being like empowered that it, even if in your head isn't actually like, oh, it's not that big a deal, but actually being empowered to say, actually, I'm not comfortable with this.
That's no matter how big or small. That. It's a hard thing.
It is.
It's a big shift that we're inviting. We're saying to the whole industry, we're inviting the no. We're inviting what's not okay, be it simulated sexual content, nudity or touch. Yeah, and so that we can work around and be creative. So say you have a kiss and someone, you know, an actor is not comfortable to kiss on the lips, but it says they kiss. And I can really promise you every single time that I've had a situation where it's not been suitable for the actors to kiss, but the script says they kiss, find other body parts to tell the same story, you know, like falling, you know, forehead to forehead, or taking a hand and pressing a hand to a cheek, or coming up behind somebody and putting an arm around them and putting their head on their shoulder, you know, that all of those different possible physicalities can tell the same physical storytelling. And actually, because you're interrogating, what is that kiss about? What's the power play? Who's kissing whom?
Yeah.
You know, and then once you interrogate all of that and then find the right physicality that's telling the same storytelling with different body parts, invariably actually you get something that's way more exciting because it's out of the normal. So it is quite a thing for an actor to trust that they, if they say no, that they won't be considered a troublemaker or diva. And it's inviting us as the creatives to go, you know, to work creatively with really embracing their no, really working really and openly with everywhere that is in their agreement and consent. So yes, so and it means then that the actor can stay free and open and will be able to stay giving a way better emotional storytelling of that scene because they're not feeling compromised in any way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I really love what you're saying about the no, and I guess like letting actors like really trust their instincts. And what you said about being like potentially being afraid of like being seen as difficult to work with, because I imagine that would have been like a real fear of like, oh, if I don't do this, then like this director or producer won't want to hire me again. And a lot, and previously potentially those like intimate scenes being used as like leverage over you of just like, are you game? Like, are you, you know, will you do anything?
And particularly with nudity, actually, you know, this before, you know, the statements, oh, an actor should be brave, an actor should be able to do any sexual scene and any degree of nudity. And of course, you know, just like any other, you know, just like humanity, we all have our different journey in life. We all have our different relationships with our body, with our physicality, our nudity. Just because an actor might not be comfortable, you know, to be just completely naked does not mean that they're not a brilliant actor and perhaps indeed the best actor for this role. So again, it's, and you know, and again, you know, really helping the actor to trust to say, well, actually, I'm happy to have to show naked back down to, you know, small of my back, naked chest just down to top of breast, you know, and then, you know, and again, the more, you know, the actor stays really being empowered and feeling really what they're comfortable with. We can work with camera angles and movie magic. This is it. We've got that.
Yeah,
and
again, movie magic.
This is where, all wardrobe departments are the experts. You know, the wardrobe department before the intimacy guidelines and the presence of an intimacy coordinator were present were the people that one were, you know, supported the productions with that movie magic, which is all the genitalia patches and modesty garments. Mm. So that, you know, you have the inference of nakedness or nudity, you know, while the actor being as covered and as comfortable as possible. And then also invariably it was the wardrobe that would have the ear of the actor who would be going, oh, I'm really nervous. And, you know, they really, you know, so I always really honour, you know, wardrobe departments and the wardrobe designers and wardrobe ladies and men and gentlemen, and yeah, and know that they are the experts.
They were filling a gap. They were stepping up.
Absolutely. And all of those, you know, movie magic bits, you know, we can have flesh-coloured G-strings, flesh-coloured shorts, nipple daisies, you know, breast covers, so that the director and the production can still get the inference of nudity that it wants to tell the storytelling while really supporting the actor's agreement and consent. And yeah, and then we can get on and, yeah, you know, and so there's...
Make some good TV or films.
That's right, and the industry trusting that actually we're not going to compromise what we want from the intimate content. You know, we're not going to compromise getting the best scenes possible, mm-hmm, with the actors, you know, agreements of what's really okay for them.
Yeah.
You know, that we know that actually we can work creatively. Of course, with Normal People, which was such a joy to work with, you know, Lenny Abrahamson is just, well, the whole crew, the whole production, with everybody working at the top of their game. And, you know, there's some of the scenes that the actors, you know, there's an inference of complete nudity, but the actors always had flesh coloured shorts on. And yet, you know, you ask somebody what, you know, what scenes people were had the inference of being completely naked with, and I bet you just wouldn't know, because we're working with, you know, clear storytelling, but then really, mm-hmm, beautiful camera angles that give the inference of nudity, while actually, you know, if you've got a lovely deep scene up at someone's shoulder, you're seeing down the line of the back, you assume that there's complete nudity, but actually the actor can stay being, you know, covered so that they're really comfortable. And that's what we're bringing, you know, helping the industry to understand, so that actors can trust, you know, saying what's not okay for them, and the producers and the directors knowing that they can work creatively with camera angles to still get.
Yeah. And I guess that confidence in the actor of, like, there is always going to be a creative workaround. So not thinking, oh, but if I say no to this, then it means that it won't happen, because it will happen, but it will just happen in a different way, maybe.
That's right. And that really, truly was the case in the past, you know, that an actor would say, I'm not prepared to do this screen industry, and they'd lose a job from it. And I hope that will now, you know, begin to change.
Yeah.
And the productions, and it's been so fantastic, you know, amazing productions, particularly these two recently with Normal People and with I May Destroy You. And again, you know, it was an absolute joy and privilege to work supporting Michaela Cole's writing, you know, on all the degrees of consent, you know, the eroding of someone's consent in all the amazing facets that she has written throughout I May Destroy You, and supporting her as well in the performance of the intimate scenes, you know, as these productions come out and the industry can see, you know, not just that it's, you know, intimate content that the world knows has been done with best practice, but actually they're really amazing, groundbreaking intimate scenes. You know, like with I May Destroy You, I'm so proud in particular of the scene where she's on her period and she's menstruating.
Yes. Oh, I loved that scene. That's yes. When they put the towel down, I was like, oh my God, this is so relatable. But I don't think I've ever seen anyone put a towel down in a sex scene before.
Brilliant. This is it. Absolutely. And and the paraphernalia. I was, you know, saying that half of the population menstruates for roughly 40 years of their life. And that's 1 week.
Yep.
You know, every month. So that's something like, on average, or roughly 480 weeks in their life of half the population, we're dealing with our menstrual, you know, paraphernalia. And yet it's not depicted, or it's hardly depicted, you know, and people going, really, really, is this what happens? I've had conversations. Thing. Is this really what happens?
What did the makeup team use to create that blood clot? That was amazing.
Wasn't it? That was the props department. And it wasn't it just beautiful? And again, for us,
and the way he played with it, I was like, this is amazing.
and Marwan playing Briagio, just the most beautiful actor. And again, how that's written, just the beauty of that curiosity and acceptance. And it's so important to be shown. And I'm so proud of to have supported Michaela and the production in that scene. So
that was a great scene. This question has come up a few times actually, and I feel like it would be a good one to end on. How does one become an intimacy coordinator?
So I'm really glad you asked that question. It's actually, while the guidelines themselves are quite simple, putting in place open communication and then agreement and consent, as I said, of touch, similar to sex and nudity, and then choreographing the intimate content clearly, it's actually quite a complex, what you're holding is quite complex throughout the production. So we need practitioners to be aware of on-screen sexuality and intimate storytelling, which means them really having an in-depth knowledge of the actor's process, the actor-director relationship, the director's process. There needs to be to facilitate open communication. That's across the board. And of course, each different role within a production is going to need different language, taking care of the concerns, be it the producer, the director, wardrobe, the DOP, the first AD. Then an understanding of power dynamics, navigating those power dynamics, really good language with unconscious bias, equality, diversity, conflict resolution. And then really important, the need to have body knowledge. So sort of in-depth knowledge of anatomy. So again, you can be clear and detailed, in-depth knowledge of movement, of different movement systems, as I was sharing with you earlier, Laban, five rhythms, animal work. And you can have really the skills of really clear choreography. Yes. And then, and then that understanding and taking care regarding body language of the actors, agreement and supporting agreement and consent. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
So on average, I would say it takes from beginning to being fully accredited, takes around 2 years. So my main intimacy coordinator are only just now accredited, particularly last year. We had such a body of work. So yes.
So do you offer courses?
I do. I do. And there's quite a rigorous selection process. So I invite anybody that's interested to just come and do an initial workshop so you can experience the basis of the work. And then if you're interested from that in applying, and then there's a really rigorous interview and selection process to really bespoke practitioners who have all these criteria that I'm talking about to be able to come and learn. And then equally also continuous assessment throughout the training so that, you can have someone who's really passionate and really believes in the work, but actually possibly say their own personal vulnerabilities might mean that actually they're not the suitable person to perhaps be on set, so inviting that, or someone who's an actor, and actually, the role of the intimacy coordinator isn't quite right for them. And I would say, okay, you've got all of this training and now take this back into your profession. So it's a robust training with continuous professional development, continuous assessment, and then those that are suitable to be put on placement so they get started with experience and then build up hours through to them being eligible to come for full accreditation. So like I say, it takes about 2 years altogether.
But nice and succinct. I feel like in some careers of people that I interview, it's just like there are so many different ways that you could do this and there's no like clear accreditation and it can be quite confusing. But that's nice and like, oh, okay, this is how you would do that if you wanted to.
That's what I'm working on at the moment. It's actually during this time of the COVID lockdown, it's given me the opportunity to work with my core practitioners and really writing out. I knew exactly what was wanted, but then to be able to write out. So it's been really important to be able to then write out the robust pathway through. So my intention is that we keep the role of the intimacy coordinator, or is it a young profession and growing that mm-hmm. that people who are accredited intimacy coordinators in the profession can, you know, that across the board to be robust, to be able to hold the space in the best possible way so that the role of the intimacy coordinator is really trusted in the profession.
Like you said, because it's so new. Thank you so much. This has been really enlightening and just an absolute pleasure to talk with you. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Yes, if you go to the Intimacy on Set website, and if you want to get in contact, please go to the contacts page. I have someone working with me, so if you want to be put on the mailing list or you're interested in workshops, please let us know. And please do contact us, and we'll get back to you. That'd be delighted. And also the Intimacy on Set guidelines are there, and they're there for anybody to take. And if you're going to be working on a production, you know, have a read of them, you know, print them out. And then we'll be starting up workshops, physical workshops, again, as soon as, you know, the government guidelines say that we can get physically in a space together.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to Doing It. If you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. You can find show notes at doingitpodcast.co.uk, and do go follow us on social media, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye. This was a Global Original podcast.